Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 65, entitled SEO Techniques That Work, we chat with SEO Master Brian Dean.
All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Brian Dean from Backlinko.com. Brian, what's up, man?
Hey, Justin. Good to be here.
Brian, I'm really excited to have you, man. I've been a big fan of yours for a while. You know, you're pretty much my go-to guy for anything like SEO related or, you know, search engine traffic and stuff like that, man. So I'm really excited, dude. Thanks for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Sure, no problem. Happy to be here.
Brian, just kind of jumping into, SEO, or people who may not be as familiar with SEO, why is it so important and why do people need to optimize it for their websites or blogs?
It's important just because so much of the web's traffic comes from Google. It's just inescapable. So for example, a couple of years ago, Google actually went down for like 2 minutes. Now, it's never gone down before or since for that long. But what's interesting is someone who runs analytics on a lot of big sites crunched the numbers on how much traffic changed in those 2 minutes. And they found that traffic went down 68%. In those 2 minutes to websites. Wow. So not to say that Google represents 68% of all traffic, but it's not far off. So the point is, if you're not showing up in Google, you're missing out on a huge chunk of potential traffic, way more than Facebook and Twitter and all the other social networks combined. So that's why it's really important. And the only way to do that really is to optimize your website. So Google will want to show it to people that are searching for stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I can totally relate to that, man. I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from. Like when I first started blogging and everything, it was just more about putting content out, you know, spending all my time creating this awesome content or whatever. And that's obviously a big part of SEO and getting traffic and stuff, but I was totally missing out on SEO and actually content marketing, like getting it out to people and trying to rank in Google for different pages and posts that I did. And I just didn't have any traffic for the first, 6 months or whatever that I did blogging, man, because I had no idea about SEO and I had no idea how to operate it. How did you get into SEO? Like, how did you figure out that this was important and that you had to really get it down?
Well, unfortunately, I kind of had to learn it the hard way. So I launched my first product, which was an ebook about nutrition in 2008 after I read the 4-Hour Workweek. And I built the site. I spent a ton of time on the product. I even wanted to like tie physical products to it, like sending people fish oil every time they bought the ebook and all this stuff. I basically had everything ready except traffic. And I had the sales page up. I had all different landing pages depending on different things that people might want. So I had different variations of the product that people might want for different health conditions. I had a landing page for everyone, but I didn't have anything. I didn't have any traffic. So it was kind of like, if you build it, they will come. That was my mentality. But unfortunately, it never happened. And when I looked at kind of like how to get traffic, SEO came up again and again as a great way to get traffic. Now, this was in 2008. So actually back then, more and more people were into pay-per-click with Google AdWords because it wasn't as competitive back then. So you could actually get a good amount of traffic that actually made money for you using AdWords. But I quickly realized I tried AdWords actually before SEO. It didn't work even then. To be fair, I didn't know what I was doing. But now, even if you know what you're doing, it's very difficult to have a positive ROI with AdWords. So I gravitated towards SEO pretty quickly and decided to make that like my number one way to get traffic.
Cool, man. And obviously, it's taken off for you since then. You have Backlinko and everything. And, I think you're pretty much one of the biggest authorities in this sort of genre online, which is pretty impressive considering how competitive it actually is. Brian, so let's sort of just like jump right into things. How are things working now? Like, how are things different? Not necessarily how are they different, because I know there's a lot of different, updates with Google and everything, but what's the most effective thing now in like 2016? What's still working the most as far as SEO? Like, what are some of the things you want to concentrate on in 2016 today?
Well, it's funny because even if you asked me that question 4 years ago or 6 years ago or 8 years ago, even before I got into SEO, the question is pretty much the same. It's all about getting links to your site. That is the ultimate metric that Google uses to determine if your page and your site is something they want to show to more people. So what has changed a lot is how you get those links and which links actually work. So back in the day, you could just create manipulative links that were fake. So you could go to a site that let you create a profile and you'd make your username and all that stuff. And then there'd be a website field and you'd put your website in there. And that would be a link back to your site. And Google would count that as a link. Not anymore. Now they know that's not a link. You could also, I mean, they know it's a link, but it's not, they don't count it as part of their algorithm. Same thing with article directories. You could go to article directories, write a bunch of articles, get them published, and have them link back to your site, and Google would count that as a link, no more. So the big difference is today is it's harder to get links because you have to really earn them. They have to be legitimate. People have to basically place the link on their site as an endorsement of your content, which is the original idea behind Google using links in the first place. But there was a huge time period about almost 10 years where people can manipulate that. Those days are long gone. So now it's really about earning those links.
And what's the best ways to earn those links, or like, what are some of the techniques to actually getting links? And actually, do you get links? Is it better to get links to your domain name or specific pages, posts that you're trying to rank for?
So we can tackle that one first. It's definitely better to get links to the specific page you want to rank. So, for example, I just ran a search engine ranking factor study last month where we analyzed 1 million Google search results to figure out what factors Google is using right now. And we found that the number one factor that Google uses is the number of different websites linking to your specific page. So, if you had, 100 links from 90 different websites, that's a really good sign that you're going to hit the first page. On the other hand, if you had, 100 links and 90 of them were from the same website, it's not nearly as powerful. So whenever possible, you want to get as many links from as many different sites as you can that are legitimate to the specific page you want to rank. We also found, though, that just getting links in general to your entire site boosts all of your pages. It's like a rising tide, raises all the boats. It's the same idea. You get a lot of links to your homepage, to random page, to your about page. That over time, if you get enough of those, it increases your whole domain's authority in the eyes of Google, and it'll lift all the pages on your site. But in general, you definitely want to get links directly to that page whenever possible. But the rub is, how do you do that? Well, the first step is to create something worth linking to. And this is something I really had to learn the hard way because I just created a lot of mediocre or even bad content and did some outreach to try to get people to link to it. And no one ever did. And I realized that in order to get these links, you have to produce something absolutely mind-blowing. And actually, there are some strategies like you can use to do that. It's not this vague sort of piece of advice. There are some specific things you can do to create a piece of content that people say, wow, that's really good. I want to link to that.
What are some of those kind of tips for creating some content that people want to link to? Like, what does the content look like?
Well, there's two strategies that I recommend. One is on it's sort of new that I've discovered that I figured out works really, really well, but it's a bit tricky to put off. So to pull off. We can go over that after we go over the main one, which is something I call the skyscraper technique. And this is something that's become sort of a mainstay in SEO and content marketing because it's really straightforward and it's really effective. It's not easy, it takes hard work, but if you're willing to put in the work, there's no reason that you can't succeed with it. So the skyscraper technique is basically this. First, you find a piece of content that's done really well in your niche. So let's say that you're in the fitness niche and you want to target a keyword like how to get bigger biceps. So you look at Google, you look at Twitter and social media, and you see what has already done well around that topic of getting bigger biceps. Then in step two, you create something even better. So you take that foundation that someone has built, it's already done well, it's a proven concept, and pile a couple stories on it. That's the idea behind the skyscraper. So you can make the content longer, you can make it more in depth, you can cite more research studies. If you find research studies about muscle strength and muscle growth and all that stuff, you can add more pictures and diagrams, you can add more case studies, you can make it more visually appealing by having a custom design page. Basically, there's a million ways to make the page better. That's the job of step two. Then in step three, your job is to promote that piece of content. And the best way to do that is usually to find people that link to or share the content that you found in step one. Because these people basically already said, I love this content and I link to it as an endorsement. And when you reach out to them and you say, hey, I noticed you linked to content X, I have something that's very similar, but I added X, Y, and Z, it's sort of a no-brainer that they're going to want to add your link. Of course, it will convert 100% of the time, but in my experience, it converts very well.
Mm-hmm. So if you're ranking, or you know, if you're looking for a keyword to rank for, and some of the top pages for that keyword are, say, you know, authority sites that don't necessarily have a ton of links going to the pages, but they're ranking because they're big authority sites, how do you kind of work around that?
That's a good question. It's something that is becoming more and more important because it seems like authority sites are eating up more of the real estate, and there's less kind of mom and pop sites on the first page. That being said, it can be done. And the best way to do that, and the way I've been able to overcome people in my space, which as you said, is really competitive, competing with guys like Forbes, obviously the big guys like Wikipedia, but also big authority sites in the SEO space like Moz and Search Engine Land and Search Engine Watch. I mean, Moz has 200 employees. I have one. It's just me. So I have to compete against these guys. I'm working out of my home office. They have two locations and I'm competing against them in Google. Like, what chance do I have? Well, the best thing you can do is get a lot of links directly to your page, because you can't compete with them on their domain authority, right? Moz, for example, has been around for 10 years. I've been around for 3. They have millions of links. I have probably 10% of the links they have to their whole site. So there's no way that Google's going to be like, wow, we trust Backlinko over Moz on a, you know, if all other things being equal. It's just not going to happen. Maybe in a couple of years I'll get there, but right now the fact is I'm not there. So the best thing you could do is win on a page authority game. And that's I think you mentioned that, you know, these sites may not have a lot of a page authority, but Google's saying, hey, their domain authority is great. These are sites that we trust in general, so we're going to rank them. But if you can come along and say, hey, Google, this page is amazing. Forget the rest of my site. It doesn't matter. This page is going to make your users happy. And the best signal for that is getting links from a lot of different domains. If you have that, Google will happily rank you above the big boys. I've seen it happen and I've done it myself.
Okay, cool. Brian, what other ways could you get to, or other sort of techniques, or maybe reach out sort of emails or something, could you use to get more links for a specific page if there isn't a ton of people to reach out to, you know, using the skyscraper technique? Like, what other kind of technique can you use as well?
One strategy I like to use is called the moving man method. So this broadens your sort of base that you can have for places that you can reach out to. So you're not limited to the people who just link to the first one. Because a lot of times in the skyscraper technique, as you mentioned, you know, the content you just found that you base your content on, maybe it has 20 links or 25 links. In some industries, that's a lot, right? But on the other hand, it's still only 25 people. So even if you have a great conversion rate of like 20%, that's only 4 links. Not really going to probably move you to the first page. Sometimes, depending on the link, it can actually make a huge difference, but not always. So what can you do? Well, that's where the moving man method comes in. And basically with the moving man method, what you do is you find resources like guides and blog posts and articles and even entire websites that are obsolete for some reason. So either the resource is gone, it's out of date, the site is a 404 page, it's a tool that doesn't work anymore, it's a piece of software that doesn't work anymore. And then you find out who linked to those people and reach out to them and say, hey, I noticed that you linked to this. I just wanted to give you a heads up that this isn't working anymore. And I have a resource that's somewhat similar. You may want to swap out that link with my link. And the psychology there is that you're helping them. And instead of opening with, hey, can you link to me? You're opening with like, hey, I can help you out. You have this link that people are clicking on your site and they're going to a 404 page or a page that doesn't work for some reason. It's reflecting bad on you. And no problem. Here is how you can get rid of it. Now, instead of just deleting it, You can also consider swapping it out with my link. That way you still have a link that goes to a similar resource, which is why you had the link there in the first place. And using that, it's a little bit of legwork, but the conversion rate is really high because you're helping those people out. And it's sort of just a no-brainer for them to add your link. If they're going to go into the page anyway to delete the link, they might as well add yours.
Okay. Makes sense, man. Cool. So is that just sort of websites just in your sort of field and whatever niche you're in? Or is that does it have to be related to, you know, specifically the topic you're covering?
That's a good question. It should definitely be as closely related as possible. I found that probably the number one thing that separates getting links and not getting links from this sort of email outreach is how well your content fits on that page that the person's linking to you. So if you try to fit a square peg in a round hole, it doesn't really work out well, even if your content is amazing, if it doesn't really make sense. So that's why before I even create a piece of content, I like to think of kind of who is going to share this and who would link to this and create my content with that in mind. So instead of creating content, publishing it, and then being like, okay, now what? Like, I hope I can find someone to link to this. You have that in your mind ahead of time, and it informs the way you create your content. So you're creating it for this group that's likely to link to you. And when you do that, when you get to this outreach phase, you're basically saying, I created this for you. You don't have to say that, but when they see it, they'll realize that this is something that appeals directly to them, and they'll be much more likely to add it. Now, in the case where your niche may not have a lot of people that link out, which is very common, like if you sell some boring thing, like shoe insoles or something like that, it's really hard to find blogs that write about footwear or, you know, foot health and things like that. There's tons of industries. Let's say most industries fall into that category. When you're in that situation, that's where you can use something called a shoulder niche. And a shoulder niche is basically where you find a niche that's somewhat closely related to yours that does have this group of bloggers and websites and social media people that can share your stuff, and you create something for them. Then when they link to that page that's about your topic, it increases your whole site's authority, which, as we mentioned, can help you rank better in Google for all of your pages. It's not as good as getting a link directly to the page, but in a lot of industries, that's sort of the best you can do because there just aren't a lot of people writing about what most people sell online. So, for example, I have a reader who had a client in the pest control niche in New York City. And this is a guy, you have mice in your house and you call him and he comes and gets rid of the mice. Obviously, not a lot of blogs about pest control, even though there were actually a couple, which is amazing, but they were just on pest control blogs because they were trying to use content marketing. So, but they obviously weren't going to link because these other pest control companies were competitors. So what do you do? Well, he created something in a shoulder niche of how to get pests out of your garden. So he realized that he actually did a mind map of what other topics are related to pest control. So like, you know, weatherproofing your house also keeps pests out. So that was one topic. Gardening, because you have a lot of pests like moles, depending on where you live, and bugs and things like that that eat your vegetables that you're trying to grow and your flowers in your garden. He realized that's a winner because there are a lot of gardening blogs and it relates to what he created. So what his client does. So he created an infographic that was how to keep pests out of your garden. And he promoted it, and it got on Lifehacker and the Bangor Daily News in Bangor, Maine. And because even though the links didn't go to a specific service page, they went to his client's overall site, and it increased his traffic by 15%, his organic traffic by 15%. So you can see that that's how the strategy works. It'd probably be better if you could get links directly to these service pages that he has for like cockroaches and mice and all that stuff, but it's just not going to happen. So instead of saying, well, this won't work for me, Mike, who is the reader I'm talking about, decided to create something in the shoulder niche, and it worked really well for him.
Cool. So is that, that's an interesting point as well. Is that really how like local businesses or small businesses, you know, people who aren't blogging, is that how they build up authority and try to rank for some of the keywords to their business?
That's one way of doing it. Local businesses also have a competitive advantage over a blog that a lot of them don't realize, which is they can write about local news. They have a shoulder niche of just being in a location. Like for Backlinko, it's not really tied to a specific place, or your site also isn't really tied to a specific place. Most sites really aren't. But if you're like a flower shop in Detroit, not only do you have all these shoulder niches around flowers, and again, you could probably do gardening stuff and interior design and all these other shoulder niches. But you have the fact that you're in Detroit, which means that there's a lot of sites that link out to Detroit's things. So, for example, universities often link to local businesses that can help their students. Like if you give a discount, so you could say, "Hey, students at the University of Detroit, you get a 15% discount on all flowers." You can get a link that way, or if you run a hotel in a city, you can also reach out to universities because they link out to places parents can stay for like parents' weekend. So if you're a local business, you just have like a ton of opportunities, like the ones I mentioned, but also chambers of commerce. You have local newspapers. You could put on some event at your local business, have the newspapers come down and cover it because usually those kind of small newspapers are starving for stories. Have them come down. Invite them over, and they'll write about you and they'll link back to your site. So if you have a local business, you actually have a lot of opportunities to get links that other businesses don't.
Cool, man. This also sort of brings up another topic that I actually meant to cover, and that's like reciprocal links. So if you're like a small business or something, and you know some other ones in the area or whatever, and you want to kind of build up your authority, how would exchanging links work? Is that still something to do, or is that kind of something to stay away from now with all the Google updates and everything?
I'd say that's something to stay away from. It's one of those things where you could probably get away with it, but the risk is just not worth it. You know what I mean? It's like if you get away with it, you might get a couple links from some other businesses and it can help boost your rankings. On the other hand, the best link you can get is a one-way link. So a link that only points to from that other site to you. Once you link back to them, that link isn't as powerful, but it still helps. So the best case scenario is you get some of these links. Your rankings boost a little bit, and that's great. Worst case scenario, which is unlikely, but if it does happen, your site is penalized to the point where you get zero traffic from Google. So for me, I like to stay on the safe side, even though maybe like, you know, 1 out of 10 chance that it happens, it's still just not worth the risk.
And how about like Roundup posts or things like that, where you're sending out links to other places? Is that, and then they link to you naturally or whatever. You even ask them, if they can share your stuff. How does is that potentially going to get you penalized?
No, because that's more straight up. That's more like you're not really manipulating. So what Google calls their kind of black hat stuff, they call it a link schemes. So a link scheme is kind of like where it's a scheme. You know what I mean? It's like some shady thing. You're like scheming. You're like thinking, oh, how can I get some links and do this stuff and manipulate the algorithm? On the other hand, if you create like a roundup post of the best bloggers in, you know, whatever space, and you link out to them, and you hope they link to you, and you don't ask, even if you ask them, as long as you just say, "Hey, I mentioned in this thing. If you would like to link to me, that'd be great." That's not really a link exchange in the traditional sense. So there's nothing really inherently wrong with that. Keep in mind, I'm not a spokesman for Google, so I'm not like this isn't gospel or anything. But in my opinion, if you have some sort of roundup post and you reach out to people and let them know the one and gently ask them if they wouldn't mind linking to you, I don't see anything wrong with that. But a lot of times when you do these roundup posts and people are flattered to be on it, you don't even have to ask. And that's why I have an online course and I teach something kind of like this in it called Blogger Awards, which is where you create an awards for bloggers. So the 50 best food blogs, for example. And when you reach out to them, if you do your blogger awards right and you make it look really cool and you make it look like an event, you never have to ask. And that's why I don't even recommend asking. You just let them know the one and you'll find yourself getting links.
That's really cool, and yeah, I mean that's actually a great little tip too, creating something like that, like making an event or whatever, and featuring them or something like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's much better. A lot of people, what they'll do is like, you know, the 25 best blogs about SEO. But the thing is, it's been done a lot. And it doesn't have any ring of authenticity to it. On the other hand, when you create an awards and make it like an awards with a logo and a name that's unique, so like your whatever, you can give it a unique name. It has more of an official ring to it. People will take it more seriously, and you make it an annual event. So you tie it to a year. All these little things make a big difference in terms of how people receive it and how many people link to it. So we even had one student who works for an e-commerce site. Who he did the blog awards, it did so well. He got so many links and shares that they actually did a physical blogger awards this year. They actually had like a live event where they invited the bloggers to come and they handed out trophies and all this stuff. It's crazy. But it shows how powerful that can be.
That's really cool.
Because those bloggers are incentivized to share it. So instead of being like, please, please, will you link to me? They're happy to do it because they're so proud that they've been included.
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now.
Brian, how many people do you usually sort of think or try to reach out to if you have a new post you're trying to rank for? Like, what's a number for people to shoot for to try to get as many emails or contacts as possible?
I say that if you create something and you're not doing this like every week, like you create something really great now and again, like once a month, you have something that's really amazing worth linking to. I'd say you want to reach out to at least 100 people. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of ways, even if you do everything right, you have the greatest piece of content, it fits perfectly with that person's site and specifically that person's page. That's the most important thing, is finding a page where your link makes sense. Your outreach email is perfect. You use their name. You maybe include some personal thing about, something you saw they said on Twitter, all that stuff that you did perfectly. And you reach out to 100 people. Even if all that happens, the best conversion rate you're going to get in terms of getting links is about 20%.
Okay.
That's like winning the lottery. More realistically, it's going to be more like in the 8 to 10% range. And if all those things don't go right, which isn't always possible to do all that stuff, to be honest, you're looking at like 5%. So if you only reach out to 10, like 50 people, a lot of times you can get zero links or one link from that. But if you reach out to 100, you can get five at the worst, right? Mm-hmm. And it could be zero, because sometimes your content just isn't good. Some people, create content they think is really great, but when they actually put it out there and promote it, they find it's not. This is what I found the hard way. Over many months when I first started my blog, I was trying to promote stuff that just wasn't that good. I thought it was good, but it wasn't, and no one was linking to me. Only when I started to use the skyscraper technique and other strategies for creating great content did I realize that the bar is a lot higher than I thought. That being said, it's still a numbers game, even if your stuff is great. So the more people reach out to in general, the more links you'll get.
Man, that's such a letdown though, like reaching out to the 50 or even 100 people and getting nothing.
Oh man, I've been there. That's how I know. Because when you reach out to 100, you figure, I got to get one. You know what I mean? Like, it's impossible. I'm not going to get a link out of that. But it's happened to me several times where I've got zero from 200 emails. On the other hand, it's also, dude, it's a law of averages. So like, sometimes your first 100, you get zero, and then you get five in a row on 101, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, numbers can be funny like that. But just if you look at it as like this thing you do that's a long-term thing, and on average it'll work out. I've never heard anyone that's used outreach and really regretted it, because even if you don't get a lot of links, you'll get replies from people that'll inform your outreach and your content. They'll give you some feedback and it'll help you. That's how I figured out what I need to do. Because people are getting back to me. My outreach emails were like amazing. I really personalized it and it mentioned stuff in their life and all this crazy stuff. And they're just like, just straight up, your content isn't good enough to be on this list. So it was hard to hear that, but I'm glad I did. So when you do outreach, a lot of times you can get good feedback that's a lot of times more specific than that. So they'll be like, oh, the design could be better. I wish you cited more resources, or, you should have a chart or a graph or an image in there. That sometimes you get more specific feedback. But these are the people you really want feedback from, because they're the people that have the power to link to you. So they're the people that when they say something, I recommend listening, because they're the ones that are ultimately going to be linking to you, which is how other people are going to find your content.
Mm-hmm. Cool, man. Brian, just a few more questions, man. I know you're a very busy guy, and I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but this is great, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
So Brian, what are some of the best ways to find some of these blogs or websites? Is it as simple as just getting a Google search in for related topics, or is there something else, or maybe something specific you can recommend?
Yeah, in terms of specifics, the best thing you can do if you're just getting started and you haven't done a lot of link building yet is called resource page link building. So what that is basically reaching out to things called resource pages, people that run them, and saying, hey, will you add a link to my site? And resource pages are basically, they're kind of old school, but people still use them. I have a resource page at Backlinko, and a lot of sites have them. And basically what it is a curated list of really good resources about a topic. So because, as you know, there's just so much content out there, even with Google, it can be overwhelming to determine, like, what's the best content I should read about a given topic. And a lot of experts have taken the time to curate the best stuff. So if you can find that page and have something worthy of being added, and you reach out to them in a non-pushy way, it's a no-brainer to add your resource, because when they add your link, it's actually making their page better. Because their page is only as good as the resources that they link out to. So if they link out to a great resource like yours, it makes their page, 1% better, as opposed to just no reason for them to add your link. It's really hard to do. In that case, it's very easy. So you can use search strings in Google to find resource pages, like just have your keyword plus in quotes resources plus in quotes helpful resources plus in quotes useful resources. And you can use more advanced, they're called search operators, which basically limits what Google will show you. And you can use something called in URL colon. So that's in URL colon, all one word. And then you put the word you want to search for. And what this does, instead of searching the entire page, it only brings back results that have that word in the URL. So for example, if I was looking for link building resource pages, I would put link building in, as my keyword, plus in URL colon resources. So that'll bring me all the pages in Google about link building that have the word resources in the URL, which a lot of times are resource pages. Then from there, it's just a matter of, it's kind of a grind. You got to look at every page, find a place where your link would make sense, find out who runs the page, reach out to them and ask them to add your link in a non-pushy way. Basically, hey, I found your resource page today. It's really great. I have a resource that I just created that I think is really cool. It'd be great if you would consider adding it. That's really all there is to the outreach email itself. And then from there, it's just sending out, it's the numbers game, just sending out a bunch of emails.
Mm-hmm. And so that's for a specific page and not your domain, right?
Exactly. So, unless something on your homepage is like amazing, but in 99% of the cases, your homepage usually doesn't provide a lot of value. So there's no reason someone would want to link to it. So that's why that specific page is helpful, because you create something that people would want to link to. Kind of like link bait, right? It's like a bait. You get them to link to it. And then what that'll do is hopefully rank that page. Hopefully that page is important for your business. Like it's a blog post, or an article, or a guide optimized around a keyword that your customers search for. That's the best case scenario. And that's often the case. If not, it's something that you can use to increase your domain authority and then get those other pages that are more specific to customer related searches, like the shoe inserts pages, and get those to rank, or the pest control guy's homepage. It increases homepage ranking from that infographic. So you can use that strategy too. But yeah, you definitely want to be getting those links to those resources, because that's what people are going to want to link to.
Mm-hmm. Cool, man. How many links does it sort of, I know it's kind of an arbitrary question for each keyword or whatever, but how many links does it typically take to rank on page one or even at the top of page one?
Yeah, that's really hard to answer, because back in the day when I first started in SEO, you could actually come up with some sort of estimate, but just now it's impossible because first of all, every keyword is really different. So the number of keywords you need to rank number one in Google for a keyword like insurance or credit cards, which is like the most competitive keywords online, we're talking like tens of thousands, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, some really long tail keyword like best purple yoga mat for a 48-year-old, you probably don't need as many links. One could probably do the job, or none in some cases. So it's really hard to say. But the other thing is to take into account is that Google doesn't just use links. We talked a lot about links today, but they use 200 ranking factors to rank a page. They take over 200 factors into account. So links is one of them. Most of the ranking factors do revolve around links, so it is very important. But there are other things like on-page SEO optimization, what your site is about, your site's overall topic. So if you're considered an expert in Google on that topic. Your domain's overall authority, like we talked about, is also very important. That's how all those big sites can rank, even though they don't have a lot of authority on that specific page. They can still rank because they have that domain authority. That's really important. They also look at things like how people interact with your page. So if you rank number 7 and no one clicks, and you know the number 7 result usually gets 1% of the clicks, let's say, and you're getting like 0.5%, Google will say, maybe that page should be a little bit lower. People don't really want to see that one. On the other hand, if it's getting like 3% instead of 1%, they'll lift it up. They also look at like how long people stay on your page when they click on it in Google. So if they click on it and stay a while, it's a sign that that's a page that people want to see because they're actually staying on it a long time. They're reading it, they're watching a video, whatever. On the other hand, if they click and go back, that's a really strong sign to Google that that's not a good fit for that keyword. So it's hard to say the links because there's so many other variables that are involved. Because even if you have all the links, if these other things happen, it can derail the whole thing. On the other hand, if you have these other things, you don't need as many links.
Mm-hmm. Brian, how important are internal links? Does that even matter as far as getting your site to rank, or is that kind of just more for the benefit of the reader to kind of click around and stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something that I hear a lot. It's like internal linking is really important. And whenever I talk about SEO, a lot of people are like, oh, you forgot to mention internal linking. I'm like, no, I didn't. And the reason is it's not that important for SEO. Internal linking is something that is so overrated because here's the thing. Internal linking is basically the point of internal linking is I have this page here that I want to rank. I have this other page with a lot of authority. If I link to the page with a lot of authority to the other one I want to rank, it'll increase its rankings, which is true. In that sense, internal linking is very powerful, and that's one of the reasons that when you get all those links to these other pages, like the guy's infographic, it increases the ranking of his other pages, like the exterminator guy. It's because that page was, you know, through the architecture of the site, internally linked to the homepage, and that sent authority to that page and lifted it up. So internal linking is very important in that sense. The problem is, most people don't have a lot of authority on their site to throw around. So when they internal link, they're kind of sending nothing to nothing. You know, so if you have like a 50-page site and you only have 5 links on the whole site, there's no juice to send around. You don't have a lot of authority. So I would only worry about internal linking once your site has a lot of authority. Then it can be very powerful because you basically have your own little blog network on your own site. And you can say, okay, I have this page that has a lot of juice, and I have this page that doesn't, but I want it to rank. I'll link from the page with a lot of juice to that page, and its rankings will increase, which is very true. So if you're in the fortunate position of having a ton of authority on your site, by all means, internal link very strategically. It can make a big difference. But if you don't, I wouldn't worry about internal linking for SEO. As you said, Justin, it can be great for user experience, sending people to different resources on your site that have more information on the topic. In that sense, it's good. And also when it comes to user experience, and SEO, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I actually don't even know what that expression means, but I think that's what it means. I don't know. Maybe you correct me if I'm wrong. I think it means like if something's good for one thing, it's good for the something else.
Yeah, I mean, you fooled me, man. I wasn't gonna call you out on that.
Yeah, I know. It sounded like I knew what it was. But I'm not saying it's not the right way to use it, but I think that's what it means. So if you have good user experience in general, it's just a good thing for SEO.
All right, man. Yeah. Yeah, no, totally makes a lot of sense. Just sort of one final sort of question about SEO stuff, and then we'll do like a little send off for you. But how do infographics work? Where it's just like this is something that always kind of it's in the back of my mind. How does an infographic work for Google's eyes if it's just a picture and Google reads HTML and all that stuff and specific words and does sort of like a word count? If you have Yoast, it's going to tell you if it's like a good post or not, but if it's just a picture, it can't obviously pick up on that. So how does Google know if you have a good infographic, or how does that work actually for getting you traffic?
That's a really good question. So basically Google can't read the infographic. I don't think they're ever, I mean, we're talking like really in the future when that'll happen. Mm-hmm. They even have trouble like identifying what an image is, like if it's a dog or a cat. I mean, to us, that stuff is simple, but computers aren't really good at it yet. They're getting better. But the idea that they could actually read the text on infographic, that's a couple years away. So as of right now, they basically can't read it. But fortunately, Google's not, you know, Google ranks infographics. I have a couple on the first page. Why is that? Well, one is that, like we talked about, the number one signal they use are links. So if Google sees that a bunch of people are linking to a page, they don't care if it's a video or an infographic or a blank page. People are linking to it. That means people like it and they want to show it to more people. Especially once they show it to more people, then people interact with that page and they like it. So they click on it a lot. They stay on the page a long time. That's what Google really cares about, because basically they're kind of like a crowdsourced algorithm. They just want to see people liking the content. If that's the case, they'll show it. They don't really care about the details. On the other hand, Google does want to see content on your page. And in that ranking factor study that I talked about, longer content does rank better. We found the average word count of a first page result was 1,890 words. So kind of a long page. There's a lot of content. Mm-hmm. If you just have an infographic with maybe a brief introduction, it's nowhere near that. So I think that if you have an infographic, it's even if you do have those other signals, it will help you to have some content there. So what I do is underneath my infographics, I bust out each point and I write a little description of each one in text. So for example, I have a blog post on Backlinko about creating viral content, how to create a piece of content that goes viral. And it has all these tips, like having an odd number in your headline gets more clicks, or having brackets in your headline gets more clicks, including an image gets more social shares. All these little kind of bite-sized tips. But I don't just have the infographic on the site and call it a day. I take each point out and kind of explore it and write, okay, here's, you know, I talked about odd numbers get more clicks than even numbers. Well, here's a study that found that out. This is a study by HubSpot that found this out. So here is the study, and here's what they found. And also, I tend to use odd numbers because it works. I've found anecdotally that odd numbers work. Here's an example, X, Y, and Z. Then the point number two, and I do the same thing. And before you know it, you have a pretty long piece of content to accompany your infographic that's below the infographic. So if people just want to see the infographic, boom, it's there. If they want to read more, there's a ton more below that repeats the stuff in the infographic, but also adds more color. That way you get around that problem.
Cool. And that's basically the same way to do video as well, right?
Exactly. So video, yeah, a lot of people, you can use a transcription if you want. I'm not a big fan of that because people just read the transcription. And if you have a video, if most people are presented with a video or a transcript, they'll skim the transcript because it's faster. Right? Unless you're like amazing on video. But what you can do is below the video, have some more color that actually adds some content, text content for Google, but also add some intrigue to get people to watch the video. So you can say things like I mentioned in the video, or like you saw, you know, 153, I said that this X, Y, and Z. And then it'll actually encourage them to go back up and watch the video.
Cool. Makes a lot of sense, man. Brian, is there any last sort of takeaway message or maybe a final tip you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, man? Like I said, it's been a really great, interesting and really helpful show today. But is there any last send off? And then also obviously a place that they can check you out.
Yeah, I think the best piece of advice I could give is to spend a lot of time creating something that deserves to be number one. I don't know who said this, but I heard this quote that was basically like, you know, you want to create the piece of content that Google would be embarrassed not to show on the first page. So I kind of dig that, because like you want to create something that if this is on the second page, they'd be like, oh, guys, we have more work to do to work on the algorithm. Like, this should be number one. And when you create something like that, it's not enough. You still have to promote it and build links to it, but it just makes everything a lot easier. And in terms of where to find me, the best place is to head over to backlinko.com and sign up for the newsletter. Because when you sign up for the newsletter, you get all sorts of exclusive tips, strategies, and case studies that I only share with subscribers.
Brian, thanks again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. And I know our audience is really going to love this one. So take care.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, If you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.